Hey, greetings, everyone. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West here, and welcome to the Steadfast and Loyal podcast. You gotta light 'em up before they burn it down. Let her dig deep, put 'em in the ground. But on their hands, they're hellbound.
Before they burn it down.
Hi, I'm Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, and throughout my life, from military to public service, the right to bear arms responsibly has been a fundamental belief. That's why I stand with United Patriot Supply. They're redefining what it means to be a firearms dealer by combining the experience and know-how of a traditional gun shop together with the selection and pricing power of a modern e-commerce company. Stop by our flagship store in Seneca, Kansas, or visit us online at UnitedPatriotSupply.com. Hey, greetings, everyone. Welcome back to the Steadfast and Loyal podcast. One of the things that we've been doing here, and some of you folks outside of the state of Texas may say why, but I think it's so important because we're talking to candidates that are stepping up as challengers to incumbents, Republican incumbents in the Texas State House. As a matter of fact, there's, I believe, 52 challengers to Texas state incumbents. That's just about every single one being challenged. And there are many reasons why. And I think that our next guest will articulate some of those reasons because he's one of those challengers. And he is Dennis London. As a Marine Corps veteran, cybersecurity business owner, Christian, and proud Texan, Dennis did not feel politics was his initial calling. After living through the fall and decline of the Republican Party in California, Dennis moved to Rockwall County, which is right outside Dallas County, to the east, in a search for liberty and freedom. However, the erosion of election integrity, skyrocketing property taxes, the ongoing border crisis, inappropriate content in schools, and unresponsive politicians compelled him to enter into the political arena, where he is a candidate for Texas State House District 33. And we are now joined by Dennis London. Dennis, greetings. Happy New Year. Welcome to the Steadfast and Loyal podcast.
Thank you, sir. Pleasure to be here. Happy New Year to you.
Absolutely. Give us a little bit of background about your Marine Corps history and where you served and for how long did you serve in the Corps?
Well, I, like many people, I enlisted right out of high school. Mm-hmm. So age of 17, I signed my papers, had to have my mom's permission. So actually I did that on her birthday. So she was really happy about that.
That's a nice birthday gift.
Absolutely. And so I joined the Corps in 1986. And as a Marine, we're split on our, you know, on our basic training, whether you're going to go to Parris Island or San Diego. And so yeah. I grew up in Maryland. So East Coast, went to Parris Island.
Good. Pine Tree Marine.
Yeah, sure. And so from there, traveled the world. I was a communicator. So 2512 was my MOS, my military occupational specialty. I was a wireman by trade. Got into radio, got a little bit into mucks. And then during my second enlistment, moved into the comm center where I got my top secret clearance and I was working with message traffic, message handling, and, you know, all that good stuff, if you will. Ended up separating from the Marines in 1994, honorable discharge. And just, you know, I wanted to be a recruiter, but they said the drill field was full. Yeah. So I said, well, okay. They said, or I'm sorry, I wanted to be a drill instructor. They said the drill field was full. You can be a go be a recruiter. And I said, well, I think I'll go be a civilian.
Yeah. Now, did you end up separating from the Marine Corps? So about 10, 12 years of service out in California, Camp Pendleton?
No, sir. I was out of El Toro.
Okay. So, but still out there in the California area. So that's where you ended up coming out, El Toro, which was the Marine Corps air station there, if I'm correct.
Yes, sir. That's correct. Marine Corps Air Station, El Toro, California, which during the Clinton administration got shut down as part of his, shutting down the military bases across the U.S. Yeah. And they moved down to Miramar.
Yeah. So how long was it that you stayed out in California before you had your epiphany?
Well, before I like to say before I had mental clarity, what ended up happening was I got into a really good profession. My wife is a registered geologist, which it's like a, being a lawyer or anyone that you have a registration that's tied to the state. Yeah. So her license was tied to the state for a while. I had really good jobs there because I was in cybersecurity, mm-hmm. and California was just booming with that industry. And it wasn't until 2018 that we actually moved out. So I stayed there for quite a while, did try to do some of the fighting there, joined the Tea Party there in Orange County, California. We tried to stop some of the insanity, but there's just way too many loonies out there.
And so you came to the Lone Star State of Texas, settled down in Rockwall County, beautiful area, Rockwall County. Folks, if you ever get a chance, Lake Ray Hubbard is right there. I'm on the west side of Lake Ray Hubbard in Garland, and I love driving across the lake and going up, the high ground to Rockwall. What really brought you to Rockwall County and, of course, to Texas? I mean, you say the, searching for liberty and freedom.
Yes, sir. So we were looking around in different areas of Texas. I knew I wanted to move to Texas. I just didn't know which particular area. So we had done our research as far as Republican-led portions of the population. We wanted to make sure that we were moving into a heavy Christian-based I'll say family, because that's really what the community was as a family. And we found Rockwall was 73% Republican, 85% Christian faith-based. And, it was just, it seemed like the great place to be. So since I traveled a little bit for my job, my wife traveled a little bit for a job, we dropped a pin at the airports, drew a circle that would encompass about an hour's drive out and around the areas. Mm-hmm. And Rockwall fell into that. I mean, we did it throughout Texas. We hit the Austin airport, we hit the Houston airport, we hit Dallas as well. And those were the main areas. So for us, it was just simply, we wanted to be there. Now, I had originally wanted a lot more land, mm-hmm. but we settled on an acre and a half instead of, because I honestly was looking for a minimum of 10 acres. And my mm-hmm. wife was just, I don't know what to do with 10 acres.
Yeah. Now, being up there, the growth and development in Rockwall County has just absolutely exploded. Yes, do you think that there's a reason for concern because maybe you don't have people coming from California, Illinois, New York, wherever, that have the same, impetus of moving as you had? Maybe they have some different reasons for moving and they're bringing some of those failed principles, values, and ideologies with them?
Well, yes, sir. That is obviously a huge concern. And a lot of people around here are using that as a concern against me. I can't say a lot of people. In the last campaign, they did that. This time, they're over it because they see that I've been fighting for Texas.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I like to point out to people is for those folks that move here on purpose, they're usually political refugees. They're the ones who made the decision and the conscious effort to uproot their families, their kids from their schools, their jobs, even in a lot of cases, to escape and get out and get away. And so they come here seeking that liberty, the prosperity, the freedoms that we have here in Texas. And of course, like you said, there are those that their jobs move here and they bring their same ideologies, their political left-leaning, what have you, with them. And that is of concern. But thankfully, it's a lot more of those who are escaping and wanting to come here to help preserve, protect, and defend the freedoms and liberties that we have here.
Now, you just talked about, having run previously for this exact same House district. What is it, that has caused you to look at this current incumbent who says he's a Republican, and as you gesticulate over Rockwall County, over 70% Republican, what do you see as the faults, the shortcomings with the current incumbent of this House district?
Well, one of the primary shortcomings is that he just doesn't listen. We the people, have voted and have asked for certain priorities to be, top of mind and in front and center. And what he's done is just ignored what we've asked and ignored what we told him to do. Because as you know, a representative actually works for the people. You're not the boss of the people. And he's not listening. That was one of the main things that I saw. And that was during after the 87th legislative session, when I saw the legislative report card that came out from the State Republican Executive Committee. I was going through that and I said, I don't understand why he's not doing it. And when we tried to ask him why, the answer we got was, well, you don't understand. That is a cop out beyond cop out. And it's insulting to anybody you say it to, because at that point you're saying, well, either you're too stupid for me to explain it to, or I don't know how to explain it.
The interesting thing, and we're talking about State Representative Justin Holland, he also just recently came out with a very disingenuous and dismissive quote about, the conservative grassroots and the people that are being asked to go out there and knock on doors. Can you share that little quote that he put out there?
Actually, I can't. I have that sitting here on one of my flyers, and it states that, and this is a quote that he had on Twitter, "Nobody in real Texas politics cares about the SREC or its chair. It's a defunct organization and needs a total rehaul from the top down. Local parties are AWOL. It's a mess. The good news is that they are all irrelevant and have no local or state respect, and we can win without them."
And
That
so
was what he
he's,
said.
yeah, so he's the SREC, folks, is the State Republican Executive Committee. So basically, what this state representative is saying is that I don't need the people that I'm asking to vote for me or the organizations that bring people together to go out there and block walk and advocate voting for me.
That's correct, sir.
So when you look at the issues that are out there, let's get into this. What are your top three issues, and let's talk about your solutions to those issues.
Well, obviously, securing the border is a huge issue. That has been one that, I mean, we talked about it last time. People said, well, we know there's an issue, but, is it as bad as it was? I mean, when we have nearly, I think the latest estimates, it's over 8 million, it's close to 10 million now that they're reporting since Biden took office. And
Incredible.
we have to have a stop on this. I mean, when I had a chat with our agriculture commissioner, Sid Miller, I asked him about the groundwater perspective and said, we have a water situation. And here in McClendon Chisholm, and I think I told you about this, or maybe you've read about it, here in the city of McClendon Chisholm, where I live, we ran out of water and we went into emergency water situations. And so now we're working on that, and that's all coming back. But that really brings it to mind for a lot of people. Okay, well, we can't continue to do this. Well, Sid said, and I love this, he goes, it's cowboy math. It's real simple. You got 100 head of cattle and you've got water capable for 80, you got to get rid of 20. He said, if we have, water capabilities in Texas for 25 million people to sustain on a day or on an annual basis, and we have over 32 million, we have a problem. And I was like, yes, sir, we do. So border security is definitely one of them. Next is school choice. Parents have been, and I mean, statewide, I believe it was 84% of the primary voters said they wanted school choice. Here in McClendon Chisholm or in Rockwall in District 33, it was 87%. Of course, Holland voted against it. But that was, again, what we're looking to do. And as I've been talking to teachers, as I've been talking to parents, the teachers, they're hamstrung by the administration. They have a problem kid. The kid, this bully, even if you will, if we're going to use the B word on that one, they can't discipline them. They can't remove them from the class. They keep them in there, and then what they do is they remove the victim, and that's not justice in any form or fashion. Parents can't move their kids out of a zip code unless they can pay extra outside of it. So now you're limited by income and limited by zip code. And the wealthy parents, they don't have a problem because they can just go, all right, well, it's going to cost a little more for my kid's education. But when you have the folks who can't afford it, having school choice, even an educational savings account or a voucher, would greatly help them in getting their child out of either a problem school or a failing school. And I'm sure you're aware of this as well. Our school systems here in Texas, while we have some great schools, and I'm not saying they're all bad, we've got some great schools. We also have some horrible schools. We have some failing schools. And I think you're aware of this, but they changed the grading system on our schools. It used to go A through F when they would rate the schools. Now they rate schools A through C and then or D, I think, and they no longer give them the failing grades. And that way they can say their average has come up.
Well, when you talk about, I call it educational freedom, parental choice, do you want to make sure that still there are not all of these caveats, there's not all of these, strings attached where, there are these standards and that standard and these reports that have to be sent back up to the state? I mean, do you really and truthfully want to see educational freedom happen for parents to be able to provide the best quality education for their child?
I do think it's possible, as long as we keep a lot of those strings unattached. We don't want those strings attached. We don't want to have, and that's part of the problem that we have with our education today. They're teaching to the test. If they went back to the basics of teaching, reading, writing, arithmetic, science, history, those things. I mean, the eighth grade reading comprehension level for reading at level today in the state of Texas is like 35%. Math is, I think, 34%. Those are atrocious numbers. Why aren't we doing better when Texas used to be one of the leading states and we had great education? And again, I'm not saying all schools are bad. We have some great schools here and we have some that are stellar and they're the ones that are setting the bar for others. But the way I see it is if we had a form of educational savings account or vouchers or something that would help parents with their school choice and give
Property
them
tax credit, maybe. Yeah.
that, and property taxes, that's another situation in and of itself.
Yeah.
But when here in McLennan Chisholm, 75% of our property taxes goes towards the schools. And when you look at that and you hear that our schools are underfunded, how can that be when you're getting the majority of the property taxes? And then we had 30, what was it, 32, 33 billion in surplus, and we could have done a whole lot with property taxes and we could do a whole lot with education. The property tax relief, we got some. It's not going to be long term. We got, actually, we failed. They didn't get anything done on the education aspect. Teachers could have got pay raises. That didn't happen. So, yeah, we have issues that some of them are complex, and it's going to be more than probably just something that can be handled in one session. We have issues that are going to have to involve multiple, and I'm going to say within the state agencies, at least to get together to have those hard conversations. I mean, I would love to see somebody go through the educational aspect of some of these ISDs and from a financial perspective, do a zero-based budget analysis. Let's see where the money's going. Let's actually see where your dollars, your tax dollars are going.
Would you advocate, because a lot of people, I think it's completely unfair that you can pay off your property here, own your home in Texas, but you really don't own your home because it can still be taken away from you if you don't pay your property tax. One of the 13 propositions of the Republican Party of Texas that'll be on the ballot in this March is that elimination of the property tax. Would you be willing to look and see how we can move toward a consumption-based tax here in the state of
Absolutely.
Texas? Not a state income tax, people, okay? But a consumption-based tax, which is based upon taxation of your consumption of products, goods, and services. Would that be something you see as a viable alternative?
Absolutely. I see that completely viable. That's something that could very easily be put into place and, help to save. Because I've actually talked to some people in and around the area, some in House District 33, others outside of, where they're losing generational homes. Grandparents that pass away and the kids no longer can take care of the farm, or maybe it's, 100 acres and the tax bill on it is a way above whatever their means are. And so they start selling off a little bit here, a little bit there, or they sell it off in whole and they think, wow, we just have a big payday. And then everyone in that district or in that area looks at it because whoever bought it typically is a developer. The developer comes in, wants to create a new MUD, municipal utility district. Once that's created, then they go in. And they say, well, we're going to build a new housing complex or two, or they're going to build apartments or what have you. And then we have the, like you said earlier, the continued out of control construction. And I understand growth. I do understand that. But growth just for growth's sake? No, we don't need that. And we definitely have to do something about that. But yes, to your point, we do need to do something to eliminate that, where families are losing those generational homes, yeah. or they're losing their new homes because something happens. They buy the house, they put all their savings into it, they own it outright. But you know, then,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, but then the tax bill comes around.
Yeah.
And now they're sitting there going, okay, well, we could put it on this credit card. And then they're working on paying that credit card off. And sometimes it's circumstances, right? Maybe they lose a job, or maybe there's something else that happens, what have you. But it breaks my heart whenever I hear someone say, you know, we just lost the house, we lost our property because we couldn't pay the tax bill.
You know, one of the things, coming back to the border issue, I do not agree with, you know, Governor Abbott putting people on buses and shipping them out all across the country. I think that you're aiding and abetting and enabling human trafficking. What are some of the things that you would like to see happen? You know, just give us a couple of things that you would like to see happen, types of legislation you would support at the Texas State House as a representative, for us to be able to secure that border, because Texas is a sovereign state, and the Constitution in Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3 gives us the enumerated power to do that if the federal government, which we clearly see, aren't doing it.
Yes, well, there's a ton of things that need to be done, and obviously I don't have all of the answers. I'm not involved in all of those discussions. There's more information that I would need to have. But I would love to see something where, first off, we need to just secure the border, continuing the build of the wall. Even when they had the containers up, and I can't remember, I think it was either you or someone else who was talking about it, when they had those containers up, when they had the concertina, when they had that razor wire up, there, people weren't coming across. They would go down to the next area or to mm-hmm. the next town where it was an open avenue. And as you know, I mean, when we're going to try to control any form of attack or approach, you want to funnel through one area. That way you have the best means of being able to monitor, to edit, and even eliminate, you know, from a military perspective, a threat. So when we're looking at it from that perspective, why don't we put that up and then say, look, the only way you're coming across is through the official ports of entry.
Yeah.
And when you get across, we know who you are. We're going to ID them, we're going to fingerprint them, we're going to make sure they're all in there. And we have, as you've spoken about before, we have people that are coming across who are on the terrorist watch list. They're known terrorists. We have military age personnel who are coming across who are fit and healthy, and they're not seeming to have any issues. So where is it and why is it that we can't control our border? We can't do this. And people are sitting here saying, well, we have to wait for the federal government. Mm-hmm. Actually, even Holland said that. He said, you know, we have to wait until the government does something because it's a federal issue. It's not a federal issue.
No.
You know, I mean, if he wants to look at it from that perspective, sure, Article 4, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution, right? But, you know, as you mentioned, Article 1, Section 10, Subsection 3, you know, yep. from the Texas Constitution. The yeah. governor has that ability. We're not beholden and waiting on them, because if the federal government fails to step up and do anything, we, the people of Texas, him, the governor of Texas, has not just the right, but the responsibility to protect us.
No, you're absolutely right. So you previously ran a couple of years ago for this exact same seat. Talk to us about the lessons learned from that campaign and how you can correct it for this campaign.
Well, that last campaign was trying to take a sip from a fire plug, I'll tell you. That was a pure trial by fire. I learned so much, and it's still a learning experience. One of the best things I did since then was I went to Patriot Academy with mm-hmm. Rick Green and those mm-hmm. guys, and that was a phenomenal educational experience. It taught me a lot more about the legislative process. From a campaign perspective, last time I learned you need to be out knocking on doors so much more. When you think you've knocked enough, knock some more. When you think you've made enough phone calls, call some more. When you think you've sent enough emails, send some more. Same thing with the mailers. And I know people are tired of getting all these mailers. I mean, Holland's already sent out, what, 6, 7 mailers or something like that through the district. And he's going to be sending one almost every week now. So from that, it's just, you know, you have to be out there. You have to be engaged, because people want to know that you're listening. It's like when you go to pick a family lawyer or a family doctor, you want someone who's going to listen to you and not just sit there and pontificate from their position as to, well, this is what you need to do. No, that's not what we're asking a representative to represent us. We're actually, this is a job, and a job interview really is what I look at it. And I tell people as a candidate, I'm here interviewing for the job. I want you to hire me to represent you in Austin. And that has really been one of the main learning experiences. I tried to get that conveyed last time, but the message just didn't really come through or resonate with some folks. But this time they see that I've been continuing to do the work. Even though I didn't win, I still went down to Austin. I was there in meetings. I was in the committee meetings. And I may not have been sitting behind the dais, but I was in front of it, either attending the meeting, listening to it and learning, or I was testifying for the good bills or against the bad bills, working with the legislators, working with their staff, working with the State Republican Executive Committee on trying. And we actually managed to get HB 900 passed, and I was helping Kristen Bentley with that one. That's the Reader Act to get the explicit material out of schools. That mission is not accomplished yet. Even though HB 900 passed, it's being held up in courts. So we have a big problem there. So what I want to do, and it's part of my platform, and you had asked me for three things, and this one will be my third item, is I want to make sure that we finally get that fully established. And the way to do that would be to repeal the obscenity exemption clause from within the
Correct.
Texas Penal Code. And I worked on that through Patriot Academy with the help of Rick Green. My mentor was Nathan Macias, a former state representative as well. And so we worked with that. We took it through all of the meetings. We took it through the discussions, the arguments, the sometimes heated arguments. We went through Ledge Council. We went through the legislative review. And I managed to get that passed and through the Patriot Academy to the point where, and I made sure everyone knew that I'm an active candidate and I want this to be my first filing. So, when I prevail and I pass the primary, get to the general, win the general, when we can start filing our first bills, this will be mine ready to go on day one.
Yeah, it's amazing that people don't understand about the obscenity exemption law. And you should look in your respective states because there have been carve-outs given to, libraries and some other entities that they can't have these obscene materials and they cannot be prosecuted about that. And it's pretty amazing that we have that here in the state of Texas. All right, last question, maybe the hardest question, but I think it's an important question. A lot of people outside the state of Texas, watch the Steadfast and Loyal podcast. Why is a Texas State House race important to people outside of Texas?
Wow. Yes, it's absolutely an important question, simply because Texas is one of the last bastions of our republic. If Texas falls, there won't be enough seats to actually overcome the Democrat run on the presidency. And we probably won't see another Republican president for 50 years, I'm guessing, because we're going to have to overcome all of the insanity that's going to ensue. Texas is a target for the Democrats. They're actively campaigning out here. Last time, just for a county commissioner seat here in Rockwall County, Beto O'Rourke's, Robert Francis O'Rourke's wife was door knocking against the Republican for a county commissioner seat. So yes, they have their sights set on it. And I'll tell you, coming from California, where I lived through the fall and decline of a Republican state, I watched as this is what happened. And one of the things that I would love to see happen here, and I will advocate for it, is to close our primaries. Because we have Democrats who are going to come across, they're going to vote for the left-leaning or the weak Republican or the one that is most liberal-friendly that they can utilize. And they're gonna make sure that person wins. And then here we are, the Republic of Texas, the People's Republic, and we're gonna sit there and go, what happened? How did this happen?
Well, I will tell you, Dennis London, you have my full and complete endorsement, the Steadfast and Loyal endorsement. I believe that we need to get more veterans involved in running for elected office. And I'm not talking about just Washington, D.C. I'm talking about, the utility districts, the MUDs, the city council, school boards, everything, state house, state senate. So you have my endorsement in this race, and you can go ahead and put that out on the website. And of course, when this episode comes out, people will see it as well. And we'll share this with you to be posted on your website. Where can people follow you and learn more about your campaign, Dennis London, for Texas State House District 33?
Yes, sir. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. They can learn more about me at londonfortexas.org. That's LONDONFORTEXAS.org. Londonfortexas.org.
Well, thanks so much, Dennis, for being with us. And thank you all for watching this episode of the Steadfast in Law podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please click the like button and share it with others. And until next time, steadfast and loyal. Before